All right, everybody, we are live and rolling. The floor is yours.
Hey, good afternoon, CFAC members. This meeting will start off a little bit differently since you'll be selecting your chair and vice chair today as your first agenda item. I will go ahead and ask Dana Swanson, the city clerk, to establish a quorum and call the meeting to order.
Member Alexander?
Here, present.
Member Johnson is absent. Member Peck?
Yes.
Member Shepler?
Here.
Member Wiener?
Here.
And Member Woody?
Here.
Call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Dana. And before we move into selecting a chair and vice chair, we wanted to give our two new members, committee member Michael Woody and Courtney Shepler, both an opportunity to introduce themselves. So you can decide who goes first, and if you want to tell the group and the public a little bit about yourself and why you decided to join CFAC, and then we can move into the selection of chair and vice chair.
Go ahead, Courtney.
Okay. Hi, I'm Courtney Shepler. I moved to Morro Bay about a year and a half ago and, have been trying to start to follow along with the things going on in the city and challenges facing the city. And I'm on another board where my term ends in May. So when I saw the ask for volunteers come out, I thought, well, something's rolling off my plate, may as well add something else. I do still work full-time. I'm working from home. I work for Kaiser. I am CFO for Medicare and Medicaid for Kaiser nationally, and I've been there for about 15 years. And I am also a CPA, but I don't have a side practice or anything.
Okay, my name is Michael Aaron Woody. I have a fairly long history here with my family here in Morro Bay and along the Central Coast. Professionally, my background is I'm a professional civil engineer, have been for the last 25 years here in the state of California. I'm also a licensed contractor. I'm the owner of Struckmont Engineering Construction in San Luis Obispo, where we primarily specialize in large-scale governmental projects for the federal government, in fact. And my education is an undergraduate degree in engineering from Fresno State with a master's in public administration from Harvard University. I have a bit of a background in municipal government, being a former elected official out in the city of Fresno for the Fresno City Council, where I sat on numerous boards and commissions. From that, I have been actively involved in community issues wherever I end up landing, and I saw that there was an opening here in Morro Bay for this, and being that this is my home and my family's had a long, pretty colorful history in this area, I decided that there was a good opening and opportunity to participate in what's going on here. So here I am. Hopefully I can help out.
Hey, thank you both. And since we have the city clerk with us today, thank you, Dana, for being here. If you wouldn't mind leading the group through the process of selecting a chair and a vice chair.
Certainly. My suggestion would be that you open a discussion about and maybe accept the volunteers who are willing to serve in that important capacity, beginning with the chair position, and make a motion, second and vote on that, and then following that, select a vice chair in the same manner. So I will turn it over to the committee to begin a discussion and perhaps raise hands for that important responsibility.
I'd like to move right to nomination. I'd like to nominate Courtney Shepler as our new chair. Even though she's new to the committee, her financial background in both public and the private sectors, along with being a CPA, makes her very qualified. However, my real reason is she chaired an oversight committee that monitored the expenses of a $12 million parcel tax for the Alameda Unified School District and should be very familiar with running a meeting that are subject to the Brown Act. And is anybody interested in seconding that?
I'll second that.
I will say that I had no idea that, you know, I would sign up and be nominated for chair immediately. So I'm interested in if anybody else is interested and if anybody's interested in vice chair, because I certainly have a lot to learn about the history of this committee. So either way, appreciate all of you that have the history and the experience with it and your patience. Thank you.
Do you have a motion and a second on the table? You're welcome to discuss that further if anyone would like, or I can take a roll call vote if there's any other comments that you'd like to add.
I think the first, if I could add a quick comment on this, Courtney, the quickest question I've got on this is that if this came and something was unexpected, do you want the position? Just to make sure that we all know that you do want this. I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot like this.
Well, if it were subject to an arm wrestle, I would say if there's somebody else, you know, just as motivated or more motivated, I am happy to cede that role for a while I get my feet under me, you know, or happy to be in a vice chair role. But, interested in whether or not anybody else on the committee is interested. So this was not in my thinking until less than 24 hours ago.
I'll just contribute that I'll serve at whatever capacity the committee deems. I've been on the committee for a year, certainly not as senior as Homer or Lois, so I'd be happy to serve in whatever capacity serves the committee and the study.
And I will say I am not interested in vice or chair. So, and I support, if Courtney wants to go for it, I thought maybe Steve or Homer might have. Obviously no dispute on background, just, you know, level of work. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I have no reason to question that, just that, gee, getting thrown to the deep end, so to speak, from a voluminous perspective at times. You know, Homer, are you interested in serving in vice chair?
I don't think my personality would be very good as the chair. quite frankly, I think that Courtney would work well with the city staff.
Yeah, I was thinking vice, but I mean, maybe Steve then. Were you interested in like tag teaming the role?
Yeah,
because I would, I'm just saying my hat is not in the ring for any of these positions, and I certainly would second a motion that had a Courtney-Steve or Steve-Courtney situation.
I'd suggest we take a vote on the motion that's on the table, and then you can move on to the vice chair capacity should that motion pass.
Okay.
Sound good? Okay. Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Peck?
Yes.
Member Shepler?
Yes.
Member Weiner?
Yes.
And Member Woody?
Yes.
And the motion carries. Congratulations, Courtney. And now we can move on to the consideration of a vice chair.
I'll make a nomination, and I move to appoint Stephen Peck as the vice chair of this board.
Second.
Any discussion? That'll take a vote. Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Peck?
Yes.
Member Shepler?
Yes.
Member Weiner?
Yes.
And Member Woody?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you. I'll turn back to Sarah.
Great. Well, thank you, Dana, and congratulations to Chair Shepler and Vice Chair Peck. And at this point, I would turn the meeting over to Chair Shepler, if you would like to lead the meeting, or if you'd like any staff support today or have any questions, please speak up.
Sure. Prompt me or reel me in as needed.
Okay.
So we've got the quorum. Done that part. Okay, committee member announcements and presentations. Is there anything there?
So typically there we've just gone around and I would invite any committee members to speak up too, but typically the chair has just asked individually each committee member if they have any announcements to make.
committee members, any announcements to make?
No, thank you for me.
Okay. Next up, brief Assistant City Manager Director update.
Thank you. And I don't have much for you today. I know that the one update I did want to provide you was that the ACFR is very near completion at this point. A draft of the annual comprehensive financial report is imminent. And so we will be evaluating that when we receive it from the auditor. We've not yet received that document. And then we'll, the city manager and I will be discussing options for how to get that information to CFAC, which could potentially include a special meeting because your next regularly scheduled meeting is not until April. So we will keep you informed as that progresses, but there's been good progress on it. And for those of you who are new to the committee, I updated the committee last month that the city has a new auditor this year and a totally new staff team who's responsible for the annual report. So between both of those transitions, the report has taken a little bit longer than in a standard year this year. So we thank you for your patience with that. And I do actually have one more update, just as an FYI, that we now have all of our currently budgeted finance positions filled as of yesterday. So that's very exciting. And it has, I think, one of the first days since I've been in my role that that's been true in the last 7 months. So we had Mr. Nigel Crisp join the team as our utility billing clerk. And so that'll be in the city manager's update this week as well. But just an FYI on that. So we're slowly rebuilding and stabilizing the finance staff team. That concludes my update.
Sarah. Could we go back and approve the minutes from the January 18th meeting as well?
Yes, I think that's on the consent calendar. Which,
oh, okay. I thought you were on that.
Next.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
I have a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
Will we see the 10-year forecast?
The forecast is scheduled to go to City Council on the 22nd, next Tuesday. And so I know this is one of the items that is ideally in the CFAC scope of work, and it has been a challenge to get both mid-year and the forecast done at the same time every year. So that's something that we'll be looking at from a staff standpoint in terms of time planning, and that, you know, that there's also the council subcommittee that's evaluating all of the advisory body handbook and scopes of work. So we'll be looking at trying to make sure that this timing, the timing of the scope that they land on is more achievable in the future. So I would encourage CFAC to look for that packet, which is going to be published by Friday.
That's too bad.
Okay. Next up is the public comment period. So, staff, I would ask, do you need me to read any of the instructions in that section in the public comment period, or we just open it up?
I do think, and I will lean on the city clerk here, on which pieces you need to read, but if you would like to remind the public that the meeting is being held virtually pursuant to Assembly Bill 361 and remind them how to participate.
Sure. Anything else before I begin?
Nope.
All right. Pursuant to Assembly Bill 361. And Government Code Section 54953, this meeting will be conducted telephonically through Zoom and broadcast live on cable channel 20 and streamed on the city website. Please be advised that pursuant to Assembly Bill 361 and Government Code Section 54953, and to ensure the health and safety of the public by limiting human contact that could spread the COVID-19 virus, the Veterans Hall will not be open for the meeting. Public participation is allowed in the following ways. We can be, community members may email agenda correspondence to the CFAC committee prior to the meeting. Agenda correspondence received by 10 a.m. today will be posted on the city website. That, I know we saw some of that come in. Members of the public may watch the meeting either on cable channel 20 or streamed on the city website. Alternatively, members of the public may watch the meeting and speak during general public comment or on a specific agenda item by logging into the Zoom webinar using the information provided in the agenda. Use the raise hand feature to indicate your desire to provide public comment. Each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes to provide input.
Perfect. Thank you. Now, at this time, AGP Video will monitor whether there are any raised hands in the queue of folks that would like to provide public comment. And Anthony is our technician today. Anthony, are there any raised hands?
How's it going, Dana? It's actually Hylan on the mic today.
Oh, hello, Hylan.
Hello. There are no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. And with that, you can close public comment.
Okay. This time we'll close public comment. We don't need a motion on that, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. All right, moving on to the consent calendar. The first item, approval of minutes for the January 18th CFAC meeting. I believe that Michael and I will need to abstain since we were not part of the committee at that time. So the recommendation from staff is to approve the minutes. So I will allow those of you that were here for that meeting in front of the committee to make that motion.
Chair, I'll so move.
Can we do that, Dana?
Yeah.
We don't have quorum.
Yeah, you'll need at least four voting members.
Somebody's got a panda over here.
And while it's unusual, it wouldn't be inappropriate for you to vote on the approval of the minutes.
Okay.
A motion by Member Peck?
Yeah. I'll second it.
Take a roll call vote. Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Weiner?
Yes.
Member Woody? You can vote. That's fine. Can you, if you'd like to vote, you may.
You're muted, Michael.
You're muted.
My apologies for that. Yeah, and this is for the minutes, correct?
That's correct.
I'll abstain on that.
Okay. And Vice Chair Peck?
Yes.
And Chair Shepler?
Sure, I will vote to approve them.
The motion carries. Thank you.
Okay, next on the consent calendar is the second quarter investment report included in your package with a recommendation to receive the second quarter investment report for FY21-22. Do we have a motion to, we just moved to receive it? We've received it. I will put forth the motion that we have received the second quarter investment report.
I'll second that.
Okay, roll call vote. Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Weiner?
Yes.
And Member Woody?
Yes.
Vice Chair Peck?
Yes.
And Chair Shepler?
Yes.
Motion or acceptance carries.
Thank you. All right, moving into the business items. The first item on the agenda is the review of the Water Reclamation Facility Quarterly Update Report. The recommendation from staff was to receive the quarter two update report and provide input to council as appropriate. Will there be any presentation to accompany this?
I think Greg, Greg or Sarah, are you going to do an intro, or do you want me to just jump in?
I was just going to briefly let the committee members, the new committee members, know who you were, Kyle. This is Kyle Moore with Corillo Engineers, and he's the program manager for Corillo, and he typically provides these staff presentations, but we do have Public Works Director Greg Kwolek on the line as well. And Greg, if you don't have any, do you have any further introductions?
I don't.
Great. Take it away, Kyle.
Thanks, Chair Scheffler. Congratulations, first of all. As my dad used to say, be careful what you wish for. And members of CFAC, again, I'm Kyle Rohr with Corillo Engineers. I'm the program manager for the WERC program. I have a brief presentation that gives the highlights of the second quarter 21-22 report that's in your packet. So I will attempt to share screen. Begging your indulgence that I use three different platforms and I'm not the best at Zoom, so bear with me. And if you all could let me know if you see it.
Yes.
Yes.
Perfect. All right. So again, this is the quarter two 21-22 fiscal report for the water reclamation facility project. Just a little bit for the new folks, welcome to CFAC, and also just a little bit of terminology that sometimes in the report, the reference of WRF generally applies to the entire program, which consists of three elements: the treatment plant, the conveyance system, and the recycled water facilities. But the treatment plant is also sometimes called the WRF, so don't feel bad if you're confused. I'd be happy to explain it. I find it confusing too, but the nomenclature predates my involvement with the program. So today, all we're doing is you're receiving my update and providing input or questions as you see fit. Again, this is Q2 2022. So the information I'm providing you today, for the most part, I have a look-ahead slide at the end, but this information, as well as the report that you're reading, is for the period that ends December 31st of 2021. So it's important to keep that in mind. Those of you paying attention to the program closely can appreciate the lag between this report presentation and what is actually going on out there. The reason being is that it takes a lot to pull these reports together, a lot of effort from Sarah and her staff, as well as my team at Corillo. So this is ending December of 2021. So this is a pretty straightforward, simple report this time around, not terribly exciting. The current project estimate exceeds the baseline budget. The current project estimate is still $144,674 and change, versus the original $125,941 that was established, I think, back in 2018, as I recall. So takeaway here is that the budget has not changed since the last quarter. What has changed is the allocation to the various project components, and I'm going to talk about that in a future slide. The role of CFAC is primarily for fiscal oversight and guidance, but we provide schedule information where it is impactful on the budget. So in this case, this is an update just to show you that we're on schedule for TSO compliance, and the new folks on CFAC. TSO stands for time schedule order. Time schedule order is the regulatory mandate that the City of Morro Bay has with the Regional Water Quality Control Board to complete improvements for secondary treatment for the ocean outfall. So specifically, the treatment plant component that I talked about and the conveyance need to be completed so the city can meet its secondary discharge requirements as required by the Clean Water Act. We're still on schedule for that, showing substantial completion of July of 2022 against a February 2023 mandated deadline. All the tables I'm going to show you in some shape or form are in your report. I'm going to present a highlight of the key ones. So again, as you can see, we are still at the 144,674 number that we've been at for the last three quarters. What I will say, and that you'll notice, is that there has been some movement among the component allocations. So specifically, over this last quarter, the water reclamation facility, again, that's the treatment plant, no change to that in terms of this reconciliation. Conveyance facilities, however, again, that's, and for those of you who are new, that's all the pipeline infrastructure, as well as two large pump stations to convey the sewage to the treatment plant, and also the conveyance of the water to the recycled facilities and ultimately to the ocean outfall. So the reconciliation allocation, if you will, of those of the funds, that project component, increased by around $2 million. Reflecting number one, contract amendments that hit in quarter two, and also a reallocation of funds from the general project category that were deemed to be allocated specifically to conveyance as opposed to the overall general project. Recycled water facilities has not changed. And in the general project and construction contingencies, those amounts adjusted in concert with the changes to the conveyance facilities reconciliation. So quite simply, in layman's terms, we move money from construction contingency allocated to conveyance, and the same with the general project. This is gives you an idea on how project expenditures break out from quarter to quarter. So this is quarter two actual expenditures by the components. So again, there's the treatment plant, the conveyance facilities, and the water recycled facilities. That's the Q2 expenditures, or $12.8 million. General project has to do with those costs that are borne both from the city side and city contractors, Carollo and Carollo's contractors, subcontractors, that support the entire program as a whole. So $12.8 million over Q2, and now that compares to the prior. We were sitting at $70 million of the $144 as of the end of last quarter, excuse me, of quarter one, and last quarter we're at $82. Again, this is all in the report. This is the chart that gets the most attention, and to be frank, is the most, I will say, frustrating from your program manager's perspective, and it reflects that the city is not spending money on the program at the pace that we anticipated, and the reason that is that being is that quite simply the conveyance contractors are not at the productivity rate that we would have expected. So while we thought we were doing well on trying to catch up with our budgeted our cumulative forecasted expenditures, which is your red line, we are still quite a bit behind in terms of our cumulative actual expenditures to date. We're constantly working to improve productivity. But again, in this last quarter, we're still falling behind. So I always like to throw in a looking ahead to quarter three. It seems kind of funny when I do these presentations and they're almost 2.5 months old. And like I said, that's just because of the effort it takes to pull the reports together. But I like to give a little heads up on what's going on currently. And so the last time I was in front of this body, I talked about the need for a non-budgeted amendment to address new permit requirements from the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District. I have good news that SLO ATCD found that, and these are for, step up for the benefit of the new folks, this is for retrofit upgrades for two of the emergency generators for the pump stations, namely for diesel particulates, their diesel generators. SLO came back just about a week ago and deemed the pump station B solution as adequate and passes all their requirements. So the $300,000 that we thought we would have to add to the budget, while that contract was amended, we're not going to need that $300,000. So that money is going to go back to contingency. That will be reflected in the next quarter, and it will be held for potential change orders moving forward. In addition, Corolo has prepared, with the support of the city, Corolo prepared a grant application for California Department of Water Resources under their Urban Multi-Benefit Drought Relief Grant Program for two projects, one for the recycled water facilities and one for additional infrastructure rehabilitation for the wells, for a total of about $20, $21 million. So fingers crossed that we'll get some of that money. I believe that the minimum of award, if awarded, the minimum, I think, is $5 million per project. But we're hoping for more. Well, we're hoping we get anything, and then we are hoping for more. Secondly, Corolo is in the process of preparing a new Title 16 Water Reclamation and Reuse Grant application, which is the same program that we applied for last year, and we're unsuccessful. Maximum grant amount is now $30 million, and my team's working diligently with support from the city in pulling that together. So fingers crossed that these grant opportunities will pan out to some degree. And these are not loans. This is free money. So that is the end of my presentation. I promised it would be short. And at this point, I can entertain questions. And I'll stop sharing so you can see my smiling face if I can figure out how to do it.
Sure thing. I put my hand up, and Mr. Peck has also put his hand up. So a couple of remedial questions for me, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all.
So is there any way that we can get a summary of the originally planned funding sources for this project versus where we're at today and what else is still outstanding? I'm just trying to ascertain whether or not there is more that's going to be, you know, on the city's back or less than what was originally contemplated.
Yeah, I'll start. Maybe Sarah can augment. The short answer is yes. I'm sure there are a number of reports that you can read from the very beginning, the inception of this program, and all the way through the strategy for funding the program. As you may or may not know, we're funding the program. We had a state revolving loan fund from the State Water Resources Control Board for a planning loan. And we also have a construction loan with SRF. And we also have a WIFIA loan, which is from EPA. There, I'm sure there exists a summary that talks about what the buckets are and what the city's responsibilities are. The reason I can't put my hand up and say I know exactly where this is I actually replaced the original program manager from Corolo's about a year ago, but I will have no problem finding that for you. If Sarah can't put her hands on it right now, we can definitely get that to you. Sure, sure.
That's a really good question. I'm just trying to load the budget document to see if all of that summary is captured in the current fiscal year budget that's posted on the website. But if it's not, I can certainly follow up and send you a more thorough response.
Yeah, my knee-jerk reaction was I thought that there was a summary in the quarterly report that we repeat every quarter, but now that I'm thinking about it, I'm not sure that's in there. So we can get that to you.
Yeah, you know, primarily understanding whether or not grants were forecast as part of the funding arrangement or if this is just positive upside for the city. So that would be great.
Right. I will say that the grants that I had on that last slide are certainly not part of the suit. Those are brand new, and those would be gravy, quite frankly. It'd be great to get those.
Absolutely. My second question was, of the expenditures still to come, roughly what amount of those are locked in already with fixed price contracts versus still subject to inflationary pressures or bids?
Yeah, so there is a table, and I can't commit it to memory. That information is provided in the quarterly report. There's a table in there that shows total contracted obligations to date alongside the total program budget projections.
Okay.
So there's obviously going to be a delta because we're still looking at, you know, a year plus to complete the program, and additional contracts will roll in, especially for support services for things such as cultural monitoring, and the whole recycled water component is yet to be contracted. But that information is in one of those many tables in that quarterly report.
Okay. Mr. Peck? You are muted. Still not hearing you for some reason. And I saw your mute button go on and off, so I know you were toggling it.
How's that?
There you go.
Oh, we can hear you.
Yep, that's my headset. Sorry about that. My question had to do with Courtney's second question. If I read the table correctly, we've got about $144 million of total estimated to complete. We've spent $82 million of that, which gives us about $62 million left to expand. And I think the contingency now stands at about $1.6 million. About 2.5%. Just looking at the money you've moved around recently, you know, it's kind of a zero sum, but you've moved money out of contingency. And so is that an adequate contingency to complete the work, and knowing the complexity of the work or the simplicity of the work that's left? Or is that something where we might expect another necessary bump in the contingency to cover the remaining work?
Good question, and I'll answer it in a couple of ways. So that a good way to look at the total budget of 144 is a buildup of our estimate at completion for each of those program components. Because we reconcile quarterly the budget, estimate and complete and budget are the same. That said, for each of those components, those estimate at completions include their own, to the degree available, to the degree we know it, their own, I won't say contingency, but their own placeholders for costs that we anticipate coming. So in essence, you have a placeholder for things that we know are going to hit or strongly anticipate are going to hit each of those hard elements. But then we also have a contingency bucket that has the ability to apply to all the other ones. So the overall contingency from a program-wide hard cost perspective is not just 1.6. There's other inside those components. That said, your question is, your question's a very good one. And we would expect, as the program gets more mature, the amount that's in both the contingency and placeholder budgets should go down. At this point in time, and as of the end of the Q2 report, I have no reason to believe that the combination of contingency we have in the line item and the placeholders we have within those project components, I have no reason to believe at this point that it's going to be insufficient. That said, though, there's still a lot of unknowns as it relates to the conveyance part of the program and the recycled water part of the program, mainly with respect to cultural resources uncovered during that construction. And so there's two costs that will happen there. You will have to pay the additional cost of the monitoring and all that's associated with finding cultural remains. But more importantly, it really has an impact on construction productivity, and it slows everything down. And that remains our largest concern on those two elements. The treatment plant still has to go through commissioning and startup and a whole bunch of stuff like that, but we're very confident in the number on the treatment plant, and it's really the other two elements that we're concerned about. With that said,
would you speculate a guess as to combining what I would call the line item contingency and the general contingency, how much contingency do you have in the project left to go?
I could not give you a really firm number without digging into the assumptions in the EAC off the top of my head. I could take a swag that maybe it's 50-50, but I'd have to go back and dig into it, which we can provide if that's what you'd like to see.
I have another question, Madam Chair, but I'll let my other committee members comment first.
No, I was the one muted. Mr. Woody.
Steve, I feel bad if I'm going to be asking a couple of questions. I mean, feel free to continue on the floor. I'm good with that.
And this had to do with kind of the cash flow for, it's probably a Sarah question, is if you look at the pay requests and what's been paid and what hasn't been paid, it looks like we're carrying about $17 million worth of pay requests. We probably paid the contractor and we're waiting to be reimbursed from the grant agencies, the lending agencies. Could you explain how that's being backstopped or handled? I don't see that reported in any of the financial reports or in this report.
Yeah, that's why we've been so closely tracking the cash flow. And to date, we have not had to do any sort of, interfund loans or anything like that, because the water and sewer funds, and there are several, the revenue funds, the accumulation funds, the capital funds, and the equipment replacement funds in each utility have a significant cash reserves that we've been able to utilize. And as long as the SRF program specifically is able to respond within their projected 90 to 120 day timeframe, we will be fine. And so our experience to date with that is fairly limited to the construction loan number one disbursement. And they did turn that around within 90 days. It did require a lot of staff follow-up, and we have to be somewhat take a balanced approach so that we're not bothering them about every individual disbursement, because that may actually undermine our efforts. So we're really trying to balance that. So far, the disbursement number two had some more questions, just getting started reimbursing another contractor. So that one's just now past the 90-day time frame from the November submittal date. I think 90 days would be sometime within the next week or two. But that has been approved by SRF, so we do anticipate receiving that cash for the disbursement number two within the next 3 to 4 weeks, and that would still be within the 120-day window. So far, like I said, we're very closely tracking this, but we have been able to cover that with our existing utilities funds.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Mr. Woody.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Just a couple of quick questions real fast. First of all, I got to make a comment. I've been through a lot of these types of quarterly reports before, and this is an amazing report. You guys do a stunning job. I've never seen a report that was this thorough, conveyed this much information, and was so easy to read. So my hat's off to you for doing this type of report. This is a phenomenal piece of work that I'm going through. And of course, if any comment like that, then all of a sudden it's like, but I have a question. I have a question for you. A couple of things real quick. One of which, you spoke earlier about the grant opportunities that just recently came up. Do you have a timeline on when we'll know about the results of those grant applications?
You know, that's a great question, and I wish I could answer it for you. The first one that we talked about, the DWR, we submitted it, I can't remember now, I want to say mid-January. My short answer is it's anyone's guess. It depends on how busy they are. It depends on how many applications they got. I know I'm in a public meeting, but I'm going to say it anyway. It depends on, in some cases, relationships and exposure to, you know, certain qualitative benefits and quantitative benefits on some programs versus other, and all that has to be kind of weighed. I'm not going to imply that it's mostly a political decision, but there's just a lot that goes into it. I know I'm hedging on your answer, but I'd expect to hear from DWR by the middle of the year.
Okay.
Yeah. Or at least get some idea on what our chances are. The State Water Resources Control Board one, though, it's anyone's guess.
Okay.
As soon as I like to give good news, so if, you know, as soon as we hear anything, we Coral conveys it through the work subcommittee, and I will certainly share it with folks to make sure that you guys get that good news too.
The second question I have for you, on your report, which would be page 3 of your report and page 23 of the staff report.
Okay.
Table 1.
Threaded table 1. Okay, I have it open.
You know I was going to get to this. Under the water reclamation facility, the second item on there for the design build team, the two notices of violations for the pollution prevention plan. Very quickly, what happened with those two violations?
So there was a complaint made by a resident directly to the Regional Water Quality Control Board complaining that the discharge, you're a civil engineer, so you get this, that the discharge off the site itself wasn't being controlled and it was highly turbid, muddy. The design build team immediately went out and implemented corrective measures and confirmed best management practices. Then we had an amazing storm event, I think in early December.
Mm-hmm.
And that same resident took pictures and created a narrative and provided that to the regional board as well, which resulted in the second NOV and a visit by the regional board and all corrective measures and then some were made by the design build team, and the regional board sent a letter after those were completed and said that all the violation accusations, if you will, have been addressed to their satisfaction.
Okay, so things are... I'm sorry.
I was just going to say the city wasn't fined. It was an NOV.
Sure.
Which is still, you know, a notice of violation by definition, but the regional board at the end of the day was satisfied with the measures that the design build team implemented.
Yeah, because obviously on projects like this, I mean, you can't, you know, with, like you said, the storm that came in, sometimes things like this can happen, especially on property like that with so many, so much movement on the land and everything.
Yeah, it was unfortunate timing, but happily it got resolved. And I should say, for the record, had the city been fined, it would have been the responsibility of the design build team to pay those fines.
Okay. Last question I have for you. Page 27 of your report, which would be page 47 of the staff report.
Okay.
Table 16.
Let me scroll here.
Yeah, 47 of the staff report, 27 of your report.
27.
Yeah. Yeah, table 16.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Quick question for you. Change order number 39, the notice to proceed delay at $1.2 million. How did that rack up a $1.2 million change order for a notice to proceed delay?
So shortly before or shortly after, I don't remember, that the design build team was supposed to break ground on the facility, they discovered an endangered species.
Okay.
And I want to say it's a red-legged frog, but I get my species messed up. I see Mr. Peck nodding, so it's a red-legged frog.
Was it? Yeah.
And so that was just essentially, that's exactly what it is. We had to put the brakes on for like a year. And so that's, you being in the business, you know, that's an extended overhead bogey that we had to pay.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Forgive me. I saw the NTP on this with no explanation to it. And I thought, okay, how in the world? Okay. So it was a frog, basically.
Yeah. I guess this table is a living document.
Sure.
It's been a while since I've revisited the frog. Yeah, we could probably add a little bit more description to that for new people that read that report.
Yeah, and forgive me, because I know sometimes when I see it or constituent will stop me, I have to shrug my shoulders and say, I have no idea. So I understand there was a frog involved, and we're good.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for questions.
Okay. Swinger.
Hi. And Kyle. My question is really a clarification question based on the report that you presented in terms of the slides. So at the beginning, when you were describing the TSO, the time schedule order, and as treatment and conveyance, you show it as on schedule, correct? But then when we looked at the spending graph, there was comments made about underspending on conveyance and productivity issues. I didn't understand that gap between on schedule and underspending.
Yeah, you know, and I am looking at the slide right now, and the slide is not, again, these are recycled slides, and I think the wording on the slide could be improved. The overall project is not on schedule, and as stated in many places in that quarterly report. What that slide is trying to convey is that we are on schedule to meet the regulatory requirements as described in the TSO, and that's the way I should phrase that slide. That is a very good catch.
Okay, thank you. That was my only question.
That's a good question. That's a good comment. Thank you.
I've got a... several questions in a little more detail, but they pertain primarily indirectly to the schedule and to continue on with Bart Beckman's philosophy about schedule and costs. I think I can ask these questions because on our agenda it says that we could talk about expense and budgets.
Yeah, I'll defer to Sarah and Greg. I'm not...
Well, these are from the report. On page 333, the roll up schedule, the graph, it says that the conveyance system will be completed in August. Do you still think that that's fairly accurate?
So that roll up schedule indicates April, not August.
No, the graph on page 33.
Now, are you referring to
bar graph?
The bar graph for the conveyance project on page 33 shows the schedule as of the end of Q2 in April 25th. Not in August, but that's not your question.
Yeah, I mean that there's a saying in front of the never mind.
No, that's okay. I'll let you finish. I'm sorry.
That's
not your question.
The question is do you think it'll be completed in August?
I don't know if it's going to be completed in August. But I will say this is that report is the best information we have as the end of December 2021.
I realize there's a
We are working on a schedule update for Q3. I don't know what that date's going to be. Is it going to be longer than April? Yes, sir, it'll be longer than April.
On page 42, section 7.2, the permitting activities, the division of drinking water pipe separation, which section of the conveyor system is that an issue?
I can't answer that question. So is that level of detail for conveyance? We have a conveyance deputy program manager that focuses just on that. And because of the scope of CPAC, he's not with me. So
I would also add, if I can interject,
that those sorts of questions are under the purview of the Public Works Advisory Board.
Okay. Does that include the project challenges and the for both the plant and the conveyance system? The reason I'm asking this is that it looks like these permitting issues are going to affect the schedule. And if the schedule is extended, there will be costs associated with that.
Yes.
Which comes back to our job is to look at the budget versus the expenses.
Right. If the general, just to be clear, my position, I'm just uncomfortable answering really detailed questions about alignments and things like that. What I can answer, though, is the question I think you're most interested in. Are all these permitting challenges going to result to schedule delays and cost increases? They might.
What I'm coming to on this is that obviously the plant, as you mentioned earlier, the plant can't be tested without having something to test it with.
Right. So let me on that specifically. As you're alluding to, April 25th completion date for the conveyance, I mean, it's February 15th. So April 25th is likely not going to happen. It will be longer than that. Well, our concern that you're pointing out is, okay, well, if the plant's ready to go and you don't have anything to put in the plant, what are you going to do? So we are currently, in fact, we've had three different workshops with a design-build contractor who's been absolutely outstanding to work with, to find a way to optimize the schedule so that gap doesn't have financial ramifications. And if it does, they're mitigated. So I won't bore this group with the technical nuances of how we're going to achieve that. But what we're doing is finding a way to shuffle specific tasks related to the startup and commissioning of that facility to keep the city from being exposed to potential extended overhead by the DB contractor having to wait on the conveyance.
Yeah, that was my major question about, you know, these various permitting delays.
And they fall into that bucket of permitting delays. I mean, obviously the permitting delays to the impact that they slow down, they either postpone or they reduce the productivity of construction, will extend the schedule and it will extend the cost. What I can't comment on is the degree to which the schedule is impacted and the cost is impacted. All I can comment on that we're comfortable stating with a lot of confidence is what you have in front of you for the Q2 report, which ends at the end of December. The Q3 report will have updates as necessary to budget and schedule.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions from committee members?
I'm sorry to interrupt, Chair. I did a quick and dirty calculation on the question you had about contracts, and you'll have to check my math. I lost what page it was on because I was scrolling around. But that information is in. I confirm that. That information is in table. Oh, bear with me. I'm so sorry. We're almost there. Table 3, which is on page 11 of the report, or 31 of your council package. there's a middle column that says current contract value, and I did a really quick calculation on my iPhone, which I'm not very good at, and I came up with $126 million. So the answer to your question is we have $126 against $144 in the contract record.
Great. Thank you. So, yeah, for staff, if we could in a future update get a schedule on the funding, that would be helpful, or if it already exists somewhere else.
Yeah, there is a version of it as of budget time on page I-86 of the adopted budget. One of the revenue source numbers in there has changed, so we can look at incorporating a summary either in the quarterly reports or a staff report to provide that more clearly. But the I-86 of the current budget is a good starting point, and then the part that's financed actually increased under the SRF construction loan, but we'll include that in future reports.
Okay. Okay. Hearing no further questions, the recommendation from staff is to receive the Q2 report.
Excuse me, Chair, if we could see if there's any public comment.
Oh, sure.
This item.
Is there any public comment on this item, number one?
Thank you, Chair. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
I put forth a motion that we receive the Q2 or quarterly update report. Do I have a second?
Can I ask a quick question before the motion is made?
Sure.
Okay. Because I'm new to how this meeting works, there was, as I'm sure everybody had, an email that was received from Ms. Weinholz, I believe. How are her questions handled in a meeting like this? Or anybody's questions, for that matter, that are submitted as her email came in to all of us.
I can take that, Mr. Woody. So typically, if a member of the public raises questions at a meeting, the chair could, or any member of the committee could, ask staff to respond to those questions, same as what we do with city council. But we don't typically respond to community public comment on our own. In other words, we don't submit responses in email typically. So if there is a member of this committee that wanted us to respond to those questions, we could do so now. So it's really at the will of the committee.
Yeah, my observation was all of Betty's questions got answered during the course of the discussion, at least as I remember them.
Yeah, I also took it as, yeah, some of the questions would be more under the purview of the Public Works Advisory Board and, you know, some of the other components, but we'll raise it at City Council with some of those updates. Okay, so back to the motion. If everyone is comfortable proceeding, again, the put forth the motion that we received the Q2 WRF quarterly update report. I have a second.
I'll second it.
Okay, and a roll call to Member Alexander.
Yes.
Member Weiner.
Yes.
Member Woody.
Yes.
Vice Chair Peck.
Yes.
And Madam Chair Shepler.
Yes.
Motion passes 5-1 with Member Johnson absent.
Thank you. Next item on our next business item, number 2, review of fiscal year, mid-year budget report, including the semi-annual report on Measure Q and E funds.
Thank you. I will lead it off real quick and then turn it over to Sarah Johnson-Rios to give you the guts of this, but just wanted to report out, you know, this is the city manager's recommended mid-year budget adjustment for city council. And we really appreciate the review that you've all done already and look forward to a good discussion. This is a mid-year budget, unlike most any other, really, that I've handled since I've been here, short of, I guess, last year was also an anomaly with COVID-19. A lot of good news in this report in terms of the continuing recovery of our local economy and the showing up in the form of increased transit occupancy tax or TOT tax, as well as sales tax, which also bleeds into the measure EQ, which is derived from use tax. So largely a good message here. We also do have a lot of cleanup from this current year's budget. We did have a transition team involved in not only drafting the budget, but carrying it through and entering it into the system. And there were some issues related to that, which are largely handled here through the mid-year process. And then we do have some recommended increases of expenditure, some that just have come from learning what this year has to in store for us, but also addressing some of those errors that I mentioned before, and also requests for additional staffing as we're really trying to grapple with the great reshuffling that's going on across the board on the labor side, but also increased scope and challenges and opportunities for the city, which we'll get into later through the discussion. But anyhow, that I just wanted to hand that off, or say that before handing it off, and also thank Sarah Johnson-Rios and her team for exceptional work under very daunting challenges on the staffing side to get this work done and go through the audit with a new auditing team. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sarah. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Scott. And I will go ahead and share my screen. And hopefully you're seeing the PowerPoint slides there. Great, thank you. So as Mr. Collins mentioned, this is the standard time for the mid-year report, but not the standard mid-year report, so to speak. And for CFAC, it's both the mid-year budget update as well as your semi-annual review of Measure Q and E fund expenditures to date. So this presentation is going to include both. And I'll start with the general fund, move into Measure Q and E funds, and then move into the city's other major funds, primarily the enterprise funds. And I'll end with some minor budget changes to some other city funds. In terms of the purpose of this report, I think most of you are familiar with the mid-year concept. So for any public listening, the city's fiscal year is July 1 to June 30. And so this mid-year report covers the six-month period ending December 31st. So it is a snapshot point in time as of that date. And so there are some revenue sources and expenditures that are received inconsistently or expended inconsistently throughout the year. So it's not necessarily going to be a 50% target on both sides. And so it really is a snapshot in time. But it does allow us to take a look at where our revenues and expenditures are compared to prior years and make any recommendations for budget adjustments where needed. And as Scott mentioned, this is really a positive report overall. Recovery is continuing. The city's primary general fund revenue sources have rebounded since the beginning of the pandemic, and that was reflected in 2021 actuals, and it is reflected again in the recommendations here to increase some of those revenue budgets. Those more volatile revenue sources are sales tax and TOT, which are tied to tourism activity in Morro Bay, and those are both looking really positive at mid-year. And as a result of that recovery, the city has the opportunity to continue the gradual restoration of some of the cuts, the significant cuts that were made at the onset of the pandemic. So the expenditure side of the mid-year budget adjustment recommendations reflects that need to continue to restore expenditure levels to be able to provide core city services and to address council goals, which were updated in November of 2021. The mid-year recommendations also allow us to contribute to the General Fund Emergency Reserve. And for those that aren't familiar, City Council adopted an updated General Fund Emergency Reserve policy in June 2021 that set the minimum General Fund Emergency Reserve at 33% of operating expenditures and the target at 50% of operating expenditures. And for purposes of calculating those percentages, the policy asks us to include both general fund and Measure Q&E operating expenditures. So it's a lot of background, but we're not there yet in terms of meeting the target. So that's the reason for including an additional contribution at mid-year. And then the enterprise funds are really tracking well. No major changes on the operating side. There are some CIP changes because the one water projects outside of the WRF project that you just reviewed are proceeding. So that is good as well. And so we'll dive into the general fund first, looking at revenues. There's a lot of information on the slide. So I'll start first with the pie chart on the right. That just breaks out what the city's primary general fund revenue sources are. So you can see that property tax is the largest revenue source at about a third of general fund revenues. TOT, that's transient occupancy tax, or a hotel and short-term rental tax, that makes up almost a quarter of general fund reserves, followed by the general fund sales tax that's separate from the Measure Q&E revenues, which comprises 13% of the general fund reserves. And then charges for service, transfers in, that's primarily from the cost allocation plan from enterprise funds that receive internal city services through the city. And then other includes business licenses, for example, which are trending in alignment with budget, and licenses and fees. And so some of those more specific categories are outlined in the written mid-year budget report to go into more detail there. So then on the left, basically, the two that we're recommending increases for are the at mid-year are the TOT revenues and sales tax revenues, which are both up pretty significantly as of December 31st. Our revenue increase projections are still somewhat conservative in terms of the amount of budget that we're recommending be increased, because there's still some uncertainty, and in talking with our local stakeholders and HGL, just some uncertainty around what's going to happen in Morro Bay's slower season. So we have still fairly conservative recommended revenue increases there. We're not recommending changes in some of the other line items. There probably are some areas where we could, you know, increase here and there by smaller amounts, but the broad intent and tradition at mid-year has in Morro Bay has really been to make budget changes to items that would really impact the projected general fund balance in a significant way. So we don't necessarily go through every single line, you know, smaller line items and recommend small revenue increases or decreases for that matter. So the revenue amendments that we are recommending are all increases. And as I mentioned, they're primarily in sales tax and TOT and mutual aid. Mutual aid is to reimburse the city for our firefighters having gone out into wildfire response in other areas. And so you'll see a commensurate increase on the expenditure side there. And similarly, a commensurate increase on the expenditure side for this grant revenue that community development has received to streamline their permitting process. On the expenditure side, we are, like many cities, the majority of our general fund expenditures is for personnel, because cities typically deliver core services through people. So that is 68% of the general fund expenditure budget. And then the supplies and expenses are another 24%. The capital cost in this case is the general fund's transfer out to other funds to contribute to capital projects, and then the general fund's contribution to the IT internal service fund. And the next slide, we'll get into our recommended changes here. So the total recommended increase, and there's one reduction here, and all the rest are increases for a net increase of $1,068,000. All of that will be covered by the increase in revenues. And I'm just going to quickly run through, there's a lot more detail in your written staff report, but I'm just going to quickly run through what these recommended expenditure increases are for. And then today we actually have several of our department heads on the call who have more specific knowledge about their areas of operation if there are specific questions, as well as Mr. Collins. So some of these have prior council approvals, and council has directed staff to come back and implement their budget amendment at mid-year. The first item on the list is one of those, and this is the city's contribution to staff's health insurance premiums. So those monthly premiums were raised incrementally in December and took effect in January. So for the second half of the fiscal year, the cost to the general fund is about that $38,000 there. Similarly, council had discussion in the fall about the gun control measures, and roughly half of that number there for the police department represents gun control measures. The recommended increase is a little bit less than what was included in the council staff report, and that's because some of those measures have been delayed and their implementation has been delayed due to COVID-19. But the police department is still making progress on those. And then one of the corrections from the 21-22 budget is to increase insurance costs specific to the police department. So that's the other half of that dollar amount. As I mentioned, the fire department mutual aid expenditures, it mirrors the revenue budget, and that's to offset the overtime and associated benefit costs to our firefighters when they are deployed to those fires out of the area. Public Works, I did have a question from a committee member about inflation, and are we doing an across-the-board increase to supplies and expenses because of inflation? We're not recommending that in mid-year. Most things are tracking in alignment roughly with budget. We probably will recommend that for fiscal year 2023 and across the board CPI. So instead, this year, or at mid-year, we're looking at a number of public works supplies and expenses increases to ensure that there's sufficient funding for maintenance, including facilities maintenance, tree maintenance, and Moyle Creek restoration work. On the recreation, area, this number here is a larger number than some might expect, and the majority of this number is correcting errors in the 21-22 budget, unfortunately. And so the other roughly, I'm going to get the percentage wrong, but less than half represents the increase related to restoring recreation services to the community coming out of the pandemic. So it's a combination of dollars that should have been included in the 21-22 budget based on projected service levels at that time, and increasing service levels now that we're coming out of the pandemic and adding additional part-time staffing hours at the pool, for example, and in some of the other programs to be able to continue to expand services. In admin services, that $30,000 there is recommended for the remaining fiscal year costs associated with restoring the finance position that's not yet been reinstated since COVID-19, and we're recommending that that position be created as a fiscal analyst. There's a lot more information in your staff report about why that's necessary and what that person would be doing. And then on the community development front, the $78,000 is the grant funding for electronic review software. In the city clerk area, we're also recommending $30,000 to fund the June election, which was approved by council, and then the other $35,000 to create a city clerk position. Currently, we have our very talented Dana Swanson wearing two hats as city clerk and HR manager, and so the recommendation, given significant workload increases and changes over time at the city, is to break those positions out. in the city manager's office, there is some regional coordination work that's going on. A portion of that will be reimbursed by our regional partners. That amount in total is $10,000, and then the remainder there is to accurately reflect insurance costs, given the latest information we have on that. Contractual services, there's actually a sort of a non-departmental contractual services division in the general fund, and there's a few things going on here. There's a $200,000 reduction due to a delay in the CIP assessment, which was budgeted in this area in 21-22. And so that assessment was anticipated to be done in 2021. And due to the retirement of the city engineer and the ensuing transition, that assessment has been delayed. So we're recommending reducing the budget in the current fiscal year, and then we would plan to bring that back in 22-23. Contractual services to fund a state lobbyist contract were approved by council, and so this is bringing back that increase as they directed. And we're also recommending that we begin a class and comp study in 2021. So the net change there is a negative $150,000. And I know that was a lot, so we can answer questions after, but I will keep moving. And so then the net impact on the general fund, if those changes were approved by the city council, and this again will go to them next Tuesday on February 22nd, would be a total projected general fund operating surplus of $165,000. So that's based on the budgeted surplus of $85,000 and then an additional $80,000 net surplus from the mid-year changes that are recommended. And there's your Q&A. I wanted to include these priority expenditure areas for everyone's reminder and also for the new committee members. This is the set of council-directed priority expenditures for the Measure Q&A Fund for 21-22, and this was arrived at after several meetings with CFAC and council and looking at both Measure Q and Measure E language. And so all of the budgeted expenditures and actual expenditures should be consistent with these four priorities, and that is what CFAC should be assessing with the semi-annual report, is ensuring that the funds were spent appropriately on these priority areas. So at mid-year, the Measure Q&E Fund had received 43% of its revenues and expended 20% of its total expenditures. If you exclude encumbrances, that actually is 18%, so that's the reason for that little variation there between how you look at your budget performance report, which is attached to your packet. On the revenue side, 43% might sound like it's not a lot at mid-year, but in fact, that only represents sales tax revenues through October. So that represents 33% of the year, and we received 43% of budgeted revenues. So I'll mention in a minute that that's leading to a recommendation to increase the revenue budget. The primary reason on the expenditure side that that's so low is because there are about $2 million of interfund transfers budgeted out of the Measure Q&E Fund into capital projects primarily and into the general fund reserve. And those transfer entries had not been made as of December 31st, so that's the primary reason that that's trending low. Expenditures by department, this gets into a bit more detail. And you can see here the $2 million in interfund transfers that had not yet been made on 12/31. Some of the staffing numbers will also change before the end of the fiscal year because there are some staffing charges that have not yet been incurred. For example, the PERS UAL cost contribution is an entry that we still need to make. So this probably looks a little bit atypical, honestly. There were some changes that were made in 21-22 that are taking some time for us to adjust to and to keep up with all the transfers and entries that were budgeted for the first time this year, because this is the first year that Measure Q&E, that the city's had those revenues for the entire year. So in terms of recommended budget changes for Measure Q&E, in talking with HDL, which is the city's sales tax consultant, we are recommending an increase of $500,000 to Measure E sales tax revenues. And so the amended revenue budget would be approximately $3.9 million. That's really great news. That's a lot more overall between, over the Measure Q&E fund than was anticipated. And I do just want to mention on the revenue side, if you look at your budget performance report, you'll see that the city budgeted roughly 30% of the revenues in Measure Q and roughly two-thirds, one-third in Measure Q and two-thirds in Measure E. We are actually receiving the revenues from the state, from CDTFA, as one revenue source, and so those are all coming in as our updated or consolidated 1.5% local tax measure revenues, and so all of those actuals you will see populated under Measure Q&E. I'm sorry, under Measure E. The Measure Q revenues that you see in there, which I believe are roughly $10,000, are based on late sales tax remittances that would have come in late for payments prior to April 2021. The reason that we're recommending a $500,000 increase here is that it represents, it seems like a larger number than on the general fund sales tax side. And so I had a question about that. The total amount of sales tax revenue in the Measure Q&E fund is significantly higher than the amount in the general fund budget. So on a percentage increase basis, we're recommending an 11% increase from the budget on the general fund side for sales tax and a 14% increase from budget on the Measure E side. And in both cases, we are recommending roughly half of HDL's projected increase for the fiscal year, which is still, like I said, quite a conservative assumption. But because this is a new measure, because we're coming out of a pandemic, because we're going into more of a slow season, we feel that that conservatism, at least for this fiscal year, is warranted. So the same methodology and assumptions are being applied to the sales tax for both general fund and Measure E. On the expenditure side for Measure Q&E funds, we are recommending a number of small changes to the police department budget. There were a number of items that in prior years have been budgeted in Q&E and were not budgeted in Q&E or in the general fund this year inadvertently. So we are adding those items back into the budget here. Those are the first four items. There have been some cost increases in some of those line items. But the uses of those funds are the same as in prior years. And then the records management system is an item that went to council on January 25th. The base costs for this were already included in the Measure E and Q budget for the current fiscal year. But after doing an RFP process, staff realized that the costs were going to be higher than anticipated, and so that project needs an additional $65,000 in order to update the police department with an effective records management system. In the Public Works Department, we are recommending, this is part of the, for those of you that remember, the adopted 21-22 budget, it included $175,000 for CIP implementation. And that was to be determined by the incoming public works director as to whether that would be staffing or consultant services or a combination thereof. The city did get council approval to add a senior engineer position in September, went out and did a recruitment for that, and we were unsuccessful at filling that. And so we have reevaluated how to best implement CIPs, and the Public Works Director has reevaluated that. And so we're recommending that that position, instead of being a senior engineer position in the Q&E fund, be an associate engineer position. That would be an internal recruitment. And then we would reduce the 2021 CIP implementation budget by 100,000, because we have incurred some very minor, we anticipate that we will incur some minor consultant costs, but not the full amount. So that will be an overall savings in that area for the fund. And then we are recommending that the maintenance superintendent position be reinstated, and that be reinstated to supplement maintenance and cleanliness and public safety of public spaces. The cost for that for the remainder of the fiscal year is approximately $35,000. And then finally, we're recommending two additional transfers. There is an interfund loan between the general fund and the Q&E fund, where Q&E was paying small amounts, $56,250 a year per year through 2022-23, to pay off a portion of a fire apparatus that the General Fund Emergency Reserve paid for. Since the fund has the availability during this fiscal year, and since the Council's General Fund Emergency Reserve policy calls for a higher level of reserves than we have, we would recommend that final interfund loan year be paid off early, and that there also be an additional $300,000 transferred to the General Fund Emergency Reserve. Again, that's not going to get to the 50% target that Council was looking for with its policy, but it will get us a little bit closer. And so that would be a total of $464,000 in expenditure increases, which would be more than offset by the $500,000 revenue increase. And those of you that were on the committee for the last few meetings will recall that there was also some remaining fund balance from 2021. So this doesn't even touch that, so that would still remain in the fund balance and be available to appropriate in 22-23. And thanks for bearing with me. I'll just move through the enterprise funds. The Harbor Fund first. So good news, at the end of fiscal year 2021, the Harbor Fund had an operating surplus of almost $600,000, and it still shows up in the budget with a negative fund balance projection, primarily due to long-term liabilities, and the primary long-term liability for the Harbor Fund is the pension liability. And so at mid-year, they had expended 39% of the Harbor Fund's operating budget, and CIPs are partially resuming. As many of you know, there is a backlog of capital needs at the Harbor. And just as a reminder, Measure Q&E is also contributing $250,000 to Harbor needs for 2021-22. Some of that is budgeted in the Q&E fund, and some of that is budgeted as a transfer to the Harbor Fund. In terms of the mid-year budget adjustments that we're recommending for Harbor, there are four separate funds. So this blue box here calls out those four funds. And so there are a number of transfers. And so the detail in your mid-year budget report includes a number of interfund transfers across those four funds. And we're really trying to show on this slide what the net impact is overall to the Harbor operation. And so that is the three revenue increases that you see here, increased revenue from the RV program through the current pilot dates, increased revenue from parking at the launch ramp, and an increased donation from the Friends of the Harbor. That was budgeted at $60,000, and they recently presented to council that that is actually a $100,000 donation. So that's going to help with some of the capital needs. And so then the expenditures here are outlined, and I believe our Harbor Director's on the line if we want to go into detail on these, but the net impact is going to be almost 0.1 million in expenditure increase after we net out all of the interfund transfers. The adopted budget actually included an operating surplus of approximately $0.1 million, so this isn't going to significantly change the year-end health of the fund. And when I say the harbor fund, I'm meaning the harbor funds, harbor operations overall. The water funds, and just as an FYI for our new members, these also have currently have four funds, the same four for each enterprise. And so no significant anomalies on the operating side. You'll see that the expenditures are trending low, again, because the interfund transfers hadn't been made as of December 31st. But the revenues are looking good. And so the main change here is requesting increases at mid-year, an increase at mid-year for the Nutmeg Pressure Zone project. This is primarily because an assumption was made at budget time in 2021 that the capital work of the city was going to be deferred for a year across the board because of COVID. And that actually is not the case for some of these One Water projects. Staff has been able to continue to move those forward. And so this is not due to a project budget increase. This is budgeting funds now that were intended to be budgeted in 22-23. The water fund balance can support that increase. Very similar on the sewer side, very similar revenue trends and expenditures being low, both due to primarily due to the lag in interfund transfers. And again, here the request is for a total of $1.5 million increase for two One Water projects that have been able to proceed during the current fiscal year. And the sewer fund balances can also accommodate these increases. In other funds, the transit fund is also actually technically a proprietary fund, but I have it on this other funds slide. We're recommending roughly $100,000 in increased revenue, primarily because of CARES Act reimbursement that was received later than staff anticipated, and a very minor $7,000 expenditure increase to that fund. The wayfinding project is an item that came before council, had higher than anticipated project costs. Council approved that action. Those are being transferred from the Economic Development Fund into the CIP fund to fund the increase in that project. Similarly, a council had approved a contribution to an affordable housing project at 405 Atascadero Road. They had approved $150,000, but the budget document included $75,000, so this action would budget the other half of that loan that council approved. And then there are no changes recommended to the ARPA funds. So this is the American Rescue Plan Act, and the local funding that Morro Bay is getting from there, as a reminder, is approximately $2.5 million over 2 years. We have a few years to spend those funds. We did budget the first half of those funds in 21-22, and the final rule just came out in January and announced that cities could use up to $10 million, which in our case is our full allocation, for general government services, which is a really great flexibility that cities were advocating for. So we're not recommending any changes to that at this time, and the city will still be able to budget the second half of those funds in 22-23. That concludes the lengthy presentation here, and the recommendation is for CFAC to receive the mid-year budget report, including the semi-annual report on Measure Q and E funds, and provide input to council as appropriate. And I'll stop sharing for now. And we have several staff available for questions.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay. It was a race. I don't know whose hand went up first, but Mr. Woody, I will call on you first.
sorry, Steve. Madam Chair, thank you. One comment, one question. My comment is I have followed the City of Morro Bay's staff and what you guys do here, and you guys are just absolutely world-class. I don't know how you pull it off with such a small amount of people and do such an amazing job for the people here in this community. So my appreciation as a resident of this community for what all you guys do. It's unbelievable. I do have one question, though. Just knew that was coming.
Thank you for that, and yeah. On behalf of the whole team.
On page 3 of your report, which would be page 97 of the staff report, mm-hmm. There are four primary revenue sources, generally speaking, for the general fund under property tax. I realize that property tax generally comes in the last two quarters for any community. But obviously, as you know, for this year, for the first two quarters, we've only received about 23% of the total projected, where previous years, obviously, it's in the 30s and even 40%. Is there any concern about that, or is this something that's like, yeah, we kind of saw this one coming?
No, that's a great question, and I did dig into those numbers and actually circle back with the county on that, and so it's just based on when they receive it. So I believe we actually received more revenues in January than in prior years.
Okay.
And so I'm not quite sure why there was maybe a lag in their remittance to us by 1 month this year, but we've got updated annual fiscal year projections from them, and they are on par with the budget. So if we continue to receive revenues for the remainder of the fiscal year on par as they anticipate, then we should be good with that.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, obviously property tax is a big deal, and I'd hate to come up a few million dollars short this year. It
would not absolutely
be pretty sight. All right, thank you so much.
Okay, Mr. Peck.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah, for a great report. I had a question on the mutual aid response revenue offset. It's listed as both a revenue and an expenditure. Are those revenues we received for services that we've already delivered or labor that's already been expensed?
Yes.
And was that simply an unexpected, and we've already expensed that off, and so you're increasing that, and the revenue is covering that. Is that the case?
That is the case. Yes.
Okay. All right. My other question, I guess it's a comment about the delayed CIP assessment. I know the reason for that, and you and Scott have been struggling to get to that, but I would really want to keep that one on the front of the radar screen, because we're all flying blind as to what our infrastructure obligations are, and this committee, I think, needs to be involved in helping that happen, because as Homer knows all too well on Harbor, it's we don't know what the number is. We don't know what the other numbers are. So please carry that over, and we'll be advocating for that to be a 2022-23 expense.
Great. And I see our Public Works Director turned his camera on, if you'd like to hear from him on that.
Sure, thank you.
Just wanted to say I appreciate the comment, Member Peck, and we would be looking forward to, if budgeted and approved by council, to pursuing that overall capital projects plan next fiscal year when our new city engineer comes on board as well. It'd be very timely.
Thank you.
I had a couple questions for Sarah. Charges for service.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little surprised that you didn't adjust that revenue line. Considering the new commercial projects that are currently in development, and taking also into consideration that this year's budget is about $500,000 less than the 18-19 actual revenue figures, it would seem to me, if nothing else, that this current fiscal year should be actually higher than it was in 18-19 because of those, specifically the Atascadero Road Hotel, along with the two other smaller hotels that are being built, and the change of use at the Bank of America building in Memorial Boulevard.
Yeah, I think that's a great comment and question. Unfortunately, our community development director had a conflict today, but I did check in with him a bit on that, and it hasn't been a consistent practice for them to update that every year at mid-year. He anticipated that there may be a blip upward this year that then may not continue going forward, so it is definitely possible, perhaps even likely, that our actual revenues will exceed budget, but it's a typically at mid-year, we would focus primarily on the larger revenue sources, but I think that's a comment duly noted, that we could potentially have more room there to increase the revenue.
The other question I have is the cannabis tax.
Mm-hmm.
Have they been audited?
They have not yet been audited. Again, my understanding with talking with the community development director is that that's something that staff has discussed but not had the capacity to pursue yet. So it is on our radar.
Considering that, you know, the previous owners of one of the establishments is currently being indicted for tax fraud, wouldn't it make sense to even spend some money on an outside auditor to go in and check those guys out?
Yeah, we have it on our list, and I appreciate you raising it.
Thank you.
And I did want to mention, since you raised the cannabis taxes, and I didn't call those out separately in the report, those are trending on par with budget as well. So the budget for those this year was $480,000, and we are receiving monthly revenues that are tracking with that. So that's positive.
Very good. Any further questions from the committee?
I have a comment. Can I make a comment, or is it just not appropriate time?
Sure.
This is regarding the Q&E expenses. Having been very involved in both the Q&E campaigns, I knew exactly what the voters were promised when they agreed to tax themselves. It's for that reason that I'm opposed to paying public services administrative personnel expenses with Q&E funds. I know that if infrastructure projects are going to happen, engineers need to be involved. And I also know that the employee that picks up the trash has to be supervised. But adding public services administrative staff is not how the voters expected their money to be spent. While preparing the 22-23 budget, I would hope that the staff would consider returning both of these positions to the general fund and replace their dollars in the Q&E fund with an equal amount of public service, public safety expenses. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any public comment on item two?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Good. So our recommendation is that we vote to receive the FY21-22 mid-year budget report, including the semi-annual report on Measure Q&E funds. Would anyone like to make a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second? Mr. Peck?
Yep. Yes.
And roll call vote. Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Weiner?
Yes.
Member Woody?
Yes.
Yes.
Vice Chair Peck?
Yes.
Madam Chair Shepler?
Yes.
It passes unanimously.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is future agenda items.
Thank you, Chair. And typically, I just provide a reminder of what's coming up for CFAC. So your next meeting, regularly scheduled meeting, is in April. And that's when staff brings you the recommendations for the 22-23 budget for the Measure Q&E Fund. And as I mentioned in my update earlier, we will keep you posted as the ACFR gets finalized.
So we expect that will also be in the April agenda?
We would hope to finalize that and take that to council since they're required to review that. We would hope to have that done before April. So I will coordinate with the city manager and determine options for getting that information to CFAC, which may potentially include a special meeting. We're just not exactly sure what the date is.
Okay. So that covers C and D. Anything else to note regarding future agenda items or the next meeting? Okay. Well, I would put forth a motion that we adjourn at 4:49. I have a second.
Second.
Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Weiner?
Yes.
Member Woody?
Yes.
Vice Chair Peck?
Yes.
Chair Shepler?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Congrats again to the chair and vice chair, and yep. Welcome to the new members. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks.